With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
It's 5 at 5 with Molly and Hall, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Molly Hall. 5 at 5 with Molly and Hall starts now.
What do you make of Chuck Pagano's latest sales job? Leonard Floyd as a tough guy. Are you buying in, or is it just more spin?
Well, I mean, there's two things here. One, he's playing apparently with a very painful rib injury, which if you've ever hurt a rib, and I unfortunately have, it is very painful. Now, the problem is he's out on the field. So if you're playing, you're not supposed to get sympathy, and you're not supposed to get credited with being a tough guy. You're supposed to play. And if you decide to play, you're supposed to be judged on the fact that you're on the field and you have responsibilities and you got to do your job, to quote a famous man who was once here in Chicago. So I guess I buy in a little bit, and I do have empathy, but it's more spin.
I don't have a problem with him pointing this out, because I think that Leonard Floyd is a guy that gets a lot of scrutiny and criticism, and I understand because of his draft status. The fact that he got the Sweep the Shed Award, I mean, that's a little bit the Bears give that out every week, and certainly he's a guy, though, that you notice you'd like to hear him more. You'd like to hear his name more. You'd like to see him have more sacks. But I don't know that you see him exposed as much as, like, people running right over him. When you watch him, he's not really standing out, but he's not really standing out for being terrible either. So you find out that he's playing hurt and he's playing through pain. I do give him a little credit, because I didn't know that. And I felt like that you kept on, the expectation was you needed to have him be a more dominant player, taking advantage of the attention paid Khalil Mack. Now we maybe have a little bit more of an understanding why. Yeah, it's partially spin, but I think you're always going to have that from coaches who are trying to paint their players or portray them in the best possible light. Leonard Floyd, for guys who question his toughness, probably this goes a little bit, accomplishes maybe they look at him in a different way. We'll find out when Dustin answers. But
nobody on this show would ever do such a thing.
I think that this is more than spin. I give him credit for playing hurt.
I do give him credit for playing hurt. I'm sure he is a a tough guy. Anybody that plays in the NFL for what is his fourth season now, and he's missed some games due to injury. I think I chalk some of those up to bad luck, but I don't question his toughness or his heart or anything like that. But, Molly, to your point, there's one thing is playing tough, and that's cool, and you should be lauded for that. But if you're not playing well and you're just in there to try to be tough and you're not really doing your job, as they say, then it's kind of almost to the detriment of the team. And I know we kind of go back and forth on Pro Football Focus and how much merit we put into that. But he had a 50.1 score versus the Lions. That was the fourth lowest on the team and his lowest score of the season personally. So if the injury gets to the point where you are negatively affecting your team and you are not playing well, then I think you have to kind of cut the tough guy stuff out and say, okay, I'm not feeling right. I'm not able to play up to my standard that I hold myself to. Maybe get somebody else in there. But sure, yeah, he's a tough guy. I'll buy into that. I'll however many Chuck bucks it takes to buy into whatever they're spinning over there at Hallis Hall, I'm in.
Yeah, he's not making plays. You wonder if he's costing them yards. I think that's the hard thing to know.
I'm going to buy in on him as a tough guy as well, especially playing with a rib injury, something I've never personally had, but I hear about how painful it can be. So I'll give him some credit for that. And David, you mentioned this. We criticize Leonard Floyd so much because of his draft position, and he hasn't lived up to where he was drafted. He plays more like a third or fourth round kind of guy. But he's fine out. He's fine. He's a fine player to have on the field, and he's not giving you those flash plays. I was looking at his QB hurry numbers this morning. He's actually about at where he was for the entirety of last season right now. So he's having a comparable year to last year. He just doesn't get those flash plays like the sacks. He's only got 3 sacks this year. So, like you guys said, if he gets to the point where he's so hurt that he is a detriment to the team, then they need to consider putting him on the for a week or two. But as for right now, I'll buy in on him as a tough guy, but he's still got to put up the numbers.
And sure, he's tough. He plays in the NFL. I won't question. But being tough doesn't make you a good football player, okay? Again, he's got the rear end of a track athlete. He's got the torso of a track athlete, okay? He's not a football player. The reason he's been hurt as much as he has been because he doesn't know how to play football. He doesn't know how to keep his head up. He tackles with his head down when he actually gets near a guy who actually has the ball, okay? And then he has his stupid – how do you give an award to a guy who had that ridiculously dumb personal foul in that game? That's just – I mean, that's bad. Okay, the two inside linebackers are the guys that should have gotten an award for how they played in that game.
He had a personal foul. He had a Roquan Smith had a bad penalty,
but his play outweighed it.
Okay.
I mean, the idea, you know, the quote. We have to have a quote. Oh, if a bone was protruding, that would have been the only way to keep Leonard Floyd out of the game. I don't know that it would have been a bad thing if Leonard Floyd missed a few more snaps in that game.
Zeke.
The Cowboys boast the NFL's top-rated offense. Will the Bears be able to shut it down, or will the offense have to keep up?
Well, it's going to be tough to shut down. The Cowboys are in crisis mode, though. I think that you give them due respect because Dak Prescott leads the NFL in passing yards, and Ezekiel Elliott is 10 yards away from 1,000, and that still means something with a month to go. So Amari Cooper is a threat, and they have that kind of the trinity there in Dallas that is dangerous and all the time. But I do think that when you look at what the Bills did, when you look at what the Patriots did, when you look at what the Bears can do defensively, yeah, it's a challenge. But I think that when you have come in here and, you know, Connor Williams is injured and their offensive line now is a little bit more of a makeshift offensive line because of the injury. They're averaging 8.5 yards per play. That's impressive. But when you look at the Bears' capabilities at home, at Soldier Field, they're talking down in Dallas about whether or not Dak Prescott's going to be wearing gloves or not. Okay, when that becomes an issue, you start to wonder, is it going to be in their heads because it's going to be 30 degrees? Are they going to be able to function at a high level? I think defensively, the Bears can be up to the challenge. I do wonder more so about the offense. This game, to me, is going to be whether or not the Bears' offense can move the football against a pretty good Cowboy defense, which isn't as good as the Bears. But the onus to me falls on the Bears' offense because I think the defense is up to the challenge.
Yeah, you know, it'll be very interesting to see how the defense does against Ezekiel Elliott and if he can run on them as we've seen other backs come in and run on them, and that will open up their entire game. You know, they can score points. So it's always dangerous when you're playing a team that can score points because, you know, the Bears aren't going to be able to win a track meet. They're not going to be able to outscore if they don't stop that offense. So I think the onus is on Chuck Pagano. I think that you've got to come up with a way to take advantage of home field advantage. And I don't know that we've seen the Bears do that this year. If you're relying on the offense, there's going to be a problem here because this could be like the Rams game. And last I checked, the Bears scored 7 points in that game. So you want to make sure that if a team is running at you, that you know, you've got to do some things on offense in order to eat some time to keep your defense off the field. But you're going to have to score some points, and you're going to have to figure out a way to do it. Maybe it's not on offense. Maybe you get a special teams touchdown. Maybe you score a pick six, whatever it might be. But, you know, you're going to have to get more than 17 points.
Yeah, that's what it's going to take. They're going to have a big return from Cordarrelle Patterson or Tariq Cohen. They're going to have to take the ball away from Dak. They're going to maybe have to force a fumble on somebody. That's the only way that they're going to be able to win because Dallas, despite their record, I don't know how they're 6-6 with one of the better defenses in the league and also, as written here, the first offense in the league in yards and yards per game. Now, they're 8th in points per game, so they're getting the yardage, but maybe sometimes they're not punching it in, but they still have a bunch of talent on both sides of the ball. They have a better quarterback than the Bears. They have a better running back than the Bears. They have, you know, better players at many positions. So it's going to be tough. They're going to have to take the ball away. The offense is not going to be able to keep up. I think the signs of progress that we've seen from Mitch over the past couple of weeks have been
certainly incremental, maybe the smallest increments you can muster, but they have been there. If he can continue to get a little bit better and maybe they tailor the game plan a little bit more to his liking. You know, Mitch has been a little bit more vocal, I guess you could say, over the past couple of weeks with what he prefers and what he wants this offense to look like. So maybe he can keep taking those steps up. But in terms of steps, it's a huge step up in talent from Detroit and New York to Dallas. So, Molly, I'm absolutely with you. It's going to take an effort from all three phases, and they're going to have to score in different ways than just relying on Mitchell Trubisky.
I'm glad you mentioned, Kev, that them being the number one offense is based on them being the yards and yards per game. They're actually eighth in points per game. I went ahead and I looked at it. I didn't quite realize that their offense had been putting up those kind of yards, but I wanted to go ahead and break down. And so I looked this morning at their points in their wins versus their points in their losses. So yeah, they're getting a bunch of yards, but in their losses, they're still getting yards. They're averaging 17 points per game in their losses. So the best teams that they've played, 17 points per game. They've scored 34 points a game in their wins, all against terrible teams. Their best wins against Philly, who has a horrible secondary, and they're beat up, especially at that time, they were really beat up on defense. So good for them. You've been scoring a lot of points against bad teams. Against the best defenses in the NFL that they've played, New Orleans, Buffalo, New England, they have not been able to score points at all. So I think the Bears are going to be able to slow them down defensively. The question is going to be, just like it's been all year, can the Bears' offense keep up? Even if you give up 17 points a game, which is right around what the Bears give up, can they climb up to 20 points a game against one of the better defenses in the NFL that Dallas has? That's the real question. If we keep seeing progress from Mitch, I can see them getting 10 to 15, but it is going to come down to the defense slowing down Dallas, which I think they're capable of doing. It's a matter of how much they can slow them down.
You know who I want to win this
sweep the shed.
Chuck Pagano. Okay, I want Chuck to win.
He can't give it to himself.
Well, sure he could. He's going to come up with such a plan, okay, to shut down this potented Dallas offense. I hope Zach wears gloves. They're down one of their top linemen. This is going to be a really interesting game. And because of what happened last night out in Seattle, the Bears are mathematically alive. Okay, so this is the time of year. You know, this defense, like after two or three games, there was chatter even on this station about 85 Bears ish. Okay, so here is the opportunity, even without Akeem Hicks, to show if this is 85 Bears ish. Okay, I'm getting a puzzled look.
He practiced.
Well, yeah, but he can't play.
He talked yesterday.
What does that mean?
I'm just saying. It's an event.
He's not going to be able to waddle his way out onto the field, David. I don't know if you're aware, but he can't waddle back on until they play the Packers up in Green Bay.
Is it waddle off then? Is that what you're saying?
They may waddle themselves right out of the playoffs on Thursday night. Let's hope not.
I'd like not to answer any personal questions, but if you have any baseball questions, I'd be more than happy to answer.
The Cubs decided not to tender a contract to Addison Russell. Their decision also came with a very detailed explanation by Theo Epstein. What do you think of the decision and the explanation? And will Russell be on a major league roster on opening day?
Anaheim? Joe Madden? Is that far enough away for you? Yeah, Joe still hasn't read anything about it, so it's a distinct possibility. Addison Russell, it's a couple years late, maybe, right? I mean, if you're going to bail on the guy, shouldn't that have already happened? I think the detailed explanation by Theo, that was very curious. Methinks the woman doth protest too much, if we can talk Hamlet, speaking of his mother. Or her vision of the play, rather. Play within the play. Let's not get into it.
Yeah, no, break it down for us.
All right. So there's a play within a play. The players come, and Hamlet has them try to just to act out the murder of his father. And he asks his mother what she thinks. She says, "Methinks the woman doth protest too much because she didn't marry the guy quick enough." Anyway, that went through my head.
This was a baseball decision. This was the right decision. This was a decision made because he didn't fit. And there are a lot of reasons for baseball perspective why he didn't fit. So this was a good move. The fact that they, you know, went to the lengths to explain it, I think is consistent. It was consistent with the way that they tried to kind of rehabilitate Addison Russell. They gave him every opportunity to be a productive major league player and to give a second chance as a person. And I think that they have gone above and beyond the call of duty. And they did feel like it was a duty of theirs to kind of give him every chance and exhaust every possibility. So I appreciated what he was trying to do, just like I appreciated last year what they attempted to achieve in giving him every chance and explaining it and being very conscious to this whole domestic violence kind of critics and the people. And they were sensitive to everyone involved here, I felt like. But it's time to move on. Change of scenery is something that maybe he can benefit from. The Cubs are better without him. Good riddance. He wasn't a player that was productive enough to even stay on the major league roster last year, so he won't be missed. Will he be in the majors next year? Maybe Joe Maddon enables him in Manaheim, but more likely is somewhere that is where the glare is less intense and the market is a little bit smaller. Wouldn't be shocked if it was Tampa Bay back in his home state of Florida, maybe Miami, because there's not a whole lot of attention there.
Ooh,
somewhere
you want to put him in Miami?
Well,
Addison,
I mean,
Russell with him?
That might not be a great idea, but I think somewhere that where the baseball tends to be a little bit more of a secondary story, where he doesn't get a lot of attention, perhaps.
Anaheim.
Baltimore, I've seen floated around a little bit. They're a terrible team, you know, just kind of throwing stuff to the wall. So to answer the second part of the question first, yeah, he'll be on a major league roster. He's 25 years old. At one point in time, he was people were telling me that he was a future MVP. He's Barry Larkin. He's this, he's that. He's going to be the Cubs shortstop for the next 20 years, and he's going to win multiple championships and multiple MVP awards. And I had to hear that for so long, and he just never really became that. And we can talk about the off-field stuff and the abuse and all of the deplorable things that he's done in his life, and that certainly factors into it. But this was a baseball decision. This was a financial decision. This wasn't the Cubs putting their foot down and saying, all right, we're going to get rid of this guy because he's a bad dude. This was, we don't want to pay a backup infielder $5 or $6 million. It parallels the Yolmer Sanchez thing with the White Sox. I mean, not completely, but these are backup players. They're players who aren't good enough to start. And through the arbitration process, they were going to earn $5 or $6 million, which is not what you pay for a backup infielder in the modern Major League Baseball. So, yeah, the explanation for Theo is a little overwrought, maybe. I don't think you needed all of that. You could have just said, we've got Javier Baez, we've got Nico Horner, we've got options, we've got ideas with how we want to address this. Guy couldn't, you know, play at all for the past couple years, essentially. I mean, even 2016, when he was good, not great, his production dropped off even more the past couple years after that. So I think this was strictly a baseball move. It was a money move. Good riddance. Don't let the door hit you where the good Lord split you.
Yeah, I agree. Baseball decision. It's a decision that I would have liked to see last year for the Cubs to make after everything, all those allegations came out against him. But, you know, give them some credit. They gave him another chance, and he didn't perform at all the past season. David, you said he didn't even stay in the major league roster the whole season. So, but I do agree he'll be on a major league roster somewhere because someone will look at the potential upside and his fielding abilities and say, okay, we'll take a chance on this guy, probably in one of those smaller markets like you guys are talking about. The explanation, I think, was not necessary to have. You just say, we're not going to tender Addison Russell and move on. I do, I guess, kind of get why they felt a need to release something given everything that's happened with Addison Russell in the last season. But, you know, again, yeah, good riddance. See you later. And time to move on.
Well, here's what'll be interesting is, will the league now retire him? And will it be because of what he did on the field, what he did off the field, or a combination of both? If Addison Russell is not in Major League Baseball next year, it's going to be a bad look for the Cubs, because the Cubs kept him around because he was available and because they needed, at that point, they had to have a backup for Javi Baez, and they needed to use him in that role as the backup to Javi Baez. Now they don't need him anymore. They have Nico Horner. They have David's guy, David Bodie. Did you get any? Did you get a Christmas card yet, or any kind of?
Oh, easy.
In your stocking?
Easy on that. Okay. I kind of cooled on the Bodie love.
Okay. Yeah. I just wanted to know if he sent any appreciation your way for all
No. You got
nice,
him that big money contract.
Purely
all the nice
professional relationship there.
Professional relationship. Yeah. Gotcha. So I get why the Cubs are in this situation right now. I wish they would have been able to have done this earlier, and it might save some bad look for them. We'll have to wait and see. I don't think he ends up with Madden, though, in Anaheim. No. No shot.
It's a tough one, Bruce. It's a very fair question and obviously a ripe one.
Are you at all surprised the White Sox gave James McCann a one-year, $5.4 million deal? And will McCann play out that contract or be moved before the deadline next season?
Not really surprised. I think it just reinforces just the Sox have $23.5 million tied up at the catcher position next year. And I know that 18 of that goes to Yasmani Grandal, and there's versatility there. He can play first, and McCann can DH, and there's a lot of options that they have, but they are paying for the position a premium, and that's good because I think James McCann deserved to be brought back. I like the idea of him spending the entire season in Chicago because if he does do that, it means the Sox are following through with the promise of contending in 2020. That means that they're going to be better. If they unload him at the deadline, it means that they've determined they want to be sellers, and maybe they want to look ahead. Kind of tired of looking ahead. So this is the offseason where they can go for it. They have some other moves to be made. They've got to supplement the starting pitching. This is a move that it says to the starting pitchers on the free agent market, we're serious about all the things that matter behind the plate. We've got two catchers that are professional catchers. They're going to make you look better and call good games. And frame, they sure can frame. So not surprised, and I think it's money well spent.
You know, I think it's a great move, and I'm very pleased with it. And James McCann obviously had a great year last year, and maybe the thing that we didn't give him enough credit for was working with the young pitchers, and Giolito and McCann had a really nice thing going. So if it costs you $5 million to keep that relationship going, to keep Giolito pitching the way he was pitching and everything right in his world, then that alone is worth the price of admission. So glad about this, happy that they've done it, and I think McCann could be a chip at the trade deadline if indeed the White Sox don't live up to the expectations we're going to start putting on them as they build this team. But very pleased to see James McCann back. If for no other reason than to be a specialty catcher, a very highly paid one.
Sure, no problem with it at all. Not really surprised, and I'm okay with it. It's a little bit more money than you'd like to spend on a backup catcher, perhaps. But you talk to every, not even only the pitchers, but the position players as well, and all the coaches. They all speak so highly of McCann, his presence in the clubhouse, and I think that's an important thing in baseball. It's part of getting the clubhouse all on the same page. And he was one of the leaders last year. You know, Tim Anderson praised him a ton for what McCann brought to that organization with his even-handedness and his veteran guile and all of the other intangibles. And then you look at the tangibles. Yeah, he made the All-Star team last year as well, so it's not bad to have a backup catcher with that on his resume. You know, Grandal is going to be able to play a little first base. He did that for Milwaukee last year. He's going to DH sometimes, I imagine, keep him fresh. You don't want to wear him down. We'll see if they have Zach Collins on the roster as well. Maybe a three-catcher rotation to try to ease him into the mix. We'll wait to see on that one. But I'm totally okay with James McCann coming back for another year. Pitchers love him. Giolito had his best year with him. Hopefully they can duplicate that for a few more years. And hopefully he's not moved and the White Sox are not in sell mode anymore at the trade deadline in 2020. Hopefully we've grown past that.
I like the decision as well. There's nothing wrong with stacking multiple good players at a position, especially when you do have a guy like Grandal that's going to be flexible, and you can move him around, like you were saying, Kevin, like first base and DH and various things like that. But, plus, Mo, you said it. I mean, the guy did so much for Lucas Giolito last year. You got to pay him $5 million to keep Giolito where he was last year. Absolutely. 100% I'm down for that. So I like the decision. I know that he's not the guy, that really good hitter we saw in the first half of last season. I think everyone kind of agrees that was kind of an outlier for what he actually is. But that's fine. Bring him back, stack multiple good guys in position. What if Grandal gets hurt? Now you have a really competent to good catcher to come in and fill the gap. So there's nothing wrong with bringing him back. Hopefully he doesn't get moved to the trade deadline. The only reason I would see that happening is if everything just kind of falls apart. I think he's going to be here throughout the entirety of next season.
Yeah, I think it's a very smart move. Why wouldn't you do this? This makes all the sense in the world, especially because they talked about Grindahl is not just going to catch every single day, right? He's going to play some first. He's going to DH. So when he's doing those things, why wouldn't you want a guy who at one point last year played at an all-star level?
That's a good question, David.
Reflecting the recent revelations in the hockey world, the Blackhawks announced that they are investigating allegations against assistant coach Mark Crawford by two former NHL players. Crawford has left the team until the completion of the investigation. What's at stake for the Hawks, given that Crawford was hired last summer?
Yeah, I don't know what's at stake for the Blackhawks. I'm going to be very curious to see how this entire thing plays out because, you know, Mike Babcock is mixed up in this and who hired him, Scotty Bowman. And when Scotty was a coach, I never heard any negative. I never heard of him hitting anybody, but I'm sure there was some psychological warfare going on. You're not that good and that successful. I think it's very interesting that they're taking a look at the culture of coaching in terms of the kind of abuse. A lot of this stuff with these guys is the abuse they took at junior level. You know, I think we've all had coaches that have, used some negative tactics on us. I think we've all been through that. And I think that there is this idea that you kind of man up and take it and, make a man of them and all this stuff. I don't know that I agree with that. We had a coach from Tommy Moore Football come by the house to apologize for his behavior at one point, and my father said to him, "Make a man of them." And I thought, that's great, Dad. You just gave the guy carte blanche to beat up on us anytime he wanted, which was kind of amusing, and we joked about it a lot. But we were kids, and I think as you get older, you learn to stand up for yourself and you don't take that kind of stuff. But it was wrapped up in the culture of hockey at some point, right? And we've certainly seen it in the culture of football. There's something about those physical sports that make people feel like they got to slap you in the helmet and, you know, knock you over with a pad to get you to work harder. So maybe there'll be people that will say that this is the, opification of these sports. But I don't like abusive behavior, and I don't like taking it from anybody, so I don't think it's fair that that people, put hands on anyone for any reason. I think it's out of line, and they got to get control of it.
It's somewhat embedded into the culture of every contact sport. I mean, this sort of physicality, this approach with old-school coaches, there's a generation gap, and probably happened a lot more, hopefully, in the past than it does in the present. But this could be hockey season of reckoning. This could be hockey season where these revelations start to change, team by team, level by level, the culture of a sport. And, probably it needs to be done. And it's probably a long time coming. It started, I think, because Mike Babcock got fired. He got fired because he wasn't winning. Now, when he got fired, it opened the door to former players to attack him, to reveal how he treated them physically, psychologically, all sorts of different types of abuse that was alleged. Now, that also, if you're the Blackhawks, and let's look at through the prism of the local team here, because that's what the question asks, what's at stake for them is credibility. They're always concerned about optics. They do a nice job of handling those and always presenting things in the most positive light, and they're a responsible organization. They've got to get to the bottom of this. If Mark Crawford was involved, then they have to deal with it appropriately, and I think so far they're on that path. He's taken a leave of absence. When they hired him last summer, they were looking at the fact that they had a head coach who had been behind the glass for 1,169 games. They had a young head coach. They needed somebody to provide some guidance. They weren't asking necessarily these kinds of questions because nobody else was. That's not an excuse. That's just the reality. So now you have a different sort of reality, and you've got to address it. So now Mark Crawford is gone and might not be back. And if he's not back because of these allegations, because they're proven to be true, then that's the start of something. That's the start of what's going on in hockey. The Hawks also have to be responsive and can't ignore the fact that Bill Peters, the racist allegations, that was when they were part of the organization, Rockford. That was 10 years ago. And you have things that are happening on your watch that you have to take responsibility for. This is a step in that direction.
Yeah, I think there's a huge difference between coaching hard and physically accosting a player and putting harm on them. There was kind of a thing in the NCAA basketball tournament last year where Tom Izzo was kind of being criticized for yelling at one of his players. I think that's fine. And at the time, I defended it. That's just coaching hard. He didn't physically
put his hands on the player. He didn't hit him. He didn't yank him around or anything like that. I think there's a very big difference, and you can have it one way without it crossing that line and going into the other direction. So you're right, David. I mean, we're a little short on time here, of course, but it is kind of embedded in not only hockey culture, but the generation that Mark Crawford came from. And it's a lot different than the generations that came after him. So I think they probably will get rid of him. I mean, who the hell's Mark Crawford anyway? We can put this under the rug and be gone with him and move on. But I think it is a problem, certainly in all contact sports, hockey, football, no doubt about it.
What's at stake is, like you guys were kind of touching on, is they have the ability to kind of draw a line here and say, we're not going to stand for this. Like, if you were out there physically abusing to the point of, you know, leaving bruises or how, you know, whatever the allegations were saying there, it's, you got to take a stand and say, look, we're not going to put up with this, because there is a fine line between motivating and just being abusive. I mean, it's, you know, I've had a coach that, you know, just like might give you a tap on the helmet and say, hey, you're an idiot. You're better than that. Like, you know, do better, or, you know, get in your face. That's one thing. To actually be abusive to the point of leaving marks in your body or, you know, leaving severe bruises, or, you know, God forbid, I don't think anyone said break a bone or anything like that. But that's too far. And if that is the extent that it was going to, they need to move on.
Listen, Molly, thank you for saying what you said at the start of this question. I could go on and on everybody was honest. Everybody's had this happen to them in one way. That doesn't mean it's right, but it also doesn't mean it's wrong. And I just don't understand why now. Okay, well, if you have a problem with it, then make it an issue when it happens, not later on this situation. It's a tricky question to really dive into nowadays. But I mean, I've had plenty of coaches who have put a foot in the back and grabbed my face mask and basically, you know, rubbed my face into a wrestling mat and hit me upside the head with a whistle. And look at how I turned out.
Yeah, you're playing pro ball now. It worked.
My God. All right. That is the 5
I'm
and
a little
5.
Vertically challenged.
312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw on the score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.